Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And today we have another show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and physics as well. Science, of course, I always put that in there. And it's kind of a continuation of last week's show. I couldn't quite finish. I couldn't even get close to finishing the topic of remote viewing. We did some very basic explanations. But I thought today we would go into the physics and metaphysics of remote viewing for those of you who have a more technical mind and also are interested in understanding how it is you can possibly do this sort of stuff. And it also has to do with just generally what and how someone has the ability to do any kind of psychic experience, particularly what is called lower psychic, but what is called psychic experience. Because a lot of people are interested in that area as well. And for that reason, as well as the fact that we didn't finish last week, I thought it would be good to kind of bring them all together into one kind of show. And that way, for people who, you know, they might say, well, I'm not that interested in remote viewing, but I'm kind of interested in this kind of psychic thing. Or that kind of, this is a show where you can kind of pick up on that. And if you would like to, you can call in. Of course, the number is on the screen that you're looking at or somewhere around there. It's on the page. So if you're listening in, you can put the numbers to call in, and then I don't have to say them over the air. Isn't that nice? Although, I mean, I never minded to say it, but that's okay. So if you're in the U.S. or in Canada, you can call in, and you can say, hey, I'd like to talk to you, and you can talk, say whatever you want. Okay, so let's continue, and let me first of all, kind of bring us up to speed a little bit for those people who weren't listening last week and want to know what the heck is remote viewing. Remote viewing is the ability to sense things at a distance from where someone is. It's accomplished in a number of different ways. There's actually different kinds and levels. I didn't go into all of them last week, but this week we'll cover them, I hope. And it gives a person the ability to do some pretty remarkable things. Because if you can be somewhere else with your senses, so to speak, or even in a body different from your physical body, both are possible, you can gain information, be able to even experience, to some level, other places than where you're physically presently located. Now, this has been used, by the way, by our military and some other, you know, for spying purposes and all that stuff. I'm not advocating any of that, and if you want to learn more about it, actually, there's lots of it on, like, the Internet. There's been some movies on it. There's a movie called Suspect Zero. You can watch that. And the better part of that movie is not the movie, but the part about making the movie, et cetera, and some of the experiences of the people who made the movie. That actually is more interesting than the movie itself, in my opinion, but you can watch that. And so let me go into the physics involved and then talk about how this relates to metaphysics. I'm going to kind of blend these together so that it makes a little bit more sense because, interestingly, knowing both sides, the science that we know today and the science of tomorrow, which really is what metaphysics is, you put these together and you can kind of gain a better understanding of how it could be that someone could even do this sort of stuff. All of this also includes, for some people, out-of-body experiences. You could theoretically remote view and not have a true out-of-body experience. So you could have a partial where just your senses are moved out of you, but you aren't fully there. So there are a lot of aspects to this whole thing. So let's start with the physics. I like physics. I find it's very, very interesting. Recently, I've been studying, again, in my life, some elements of quantum physics, which includes the quantum mechanical principles. Mechanics is really how things move. So if you look at it from that standpoint, it's the physics of moving, but using a physics that involves very, very small parts of our universe and how things are like atomically and subatomically put together. And the rules that apply, which are kind of different than what our common sense would tell us about the way the universe works. Now, one of the things that's interesting, and a lot of people don't know this, is that there's a thing called superpositioning of particles, and that's like parts of atoms. And even atoms themselves sometimes can be superpositioned. Now, what does that mean? In quantum physics, it means that something can be in two places at the same time. I mean, I'm not kidding you. I mean, a lot of people think, well, that's, oh, come on, you're just making that up. You know? No, I'm not. Actually, it's been proven. I mean, this is stuff that goes back a century. I know that, you know, you might say, well, God, a century and I missed it? Yeah, you did probably, because most people, when they went to school, learned a thing called Newtonian physics, which is really from three centuries or more ago. And so, interestingly, a lot of people's understandings are from so long ago that even though this other physics is pretty much replaced, at least on the subatomic scale, the Newtonian, the quantum physics, has replaced it because it's much more accurate and correct. It sounds like something out of science fiction, you know, like, wow, so there could be two places at the same time? How could it do that? Well, the answer is something like this. Theoretically, anyway, there is an uncertainty about all things. It's pretty small where we are right now, but it actually could be different and larger in other places. And this concept, again, is about a century old and or more. And this uncertainty issue really is a big deal, because if something is uncertain about where it is or in what direction and what ways it might be moving, I mean, these are really big issues, because most of the time we think we know where everything is, right? Well, the uncertainty is caused by an interaction with us and these very, very small types of energies. And the reason it affects small things more than big things is because big things kind of averages out the uncertainty, so we just don't notice as much, at least in this dimension where we exist in the physical world. Believe it or not, there are some parts even of this dimension, which isn't physical, but it's electromagnetic, where things may actually be a bit more uncertain than we even presently believe. And that may cause some very strange things to take place. Okay, so in quantum physics, here we are with a thing called superpositioning, where something can be two places at the same time, or maybe more, who knows? Hey, and that's a very interesting idea, because that kind of fits into this concept of remote viewing. What if you could, through your thought alone, and there is evidence that thought has a tremendous effect on how these particles exist and what they tend to do, it actually affects the choices that they seem to be making by our choices. Our thought is kind of controlling this energy, if you want to call it that. And so the weird thing about this is that if you're able to focus your thought on the energy that's within yourself, and that, again, is obeying maybe an expanded amount of uncertainty because of a thing called the quantum constant, you know, sometimes referred to as Planck's constant, but nonetheless, if you can control this thing, it's possible that you could be physically, maybe, you know, in your recliner or something, and at the same time, maybe you're visiting somebody in a town a ways away, or maybe even, who knows, another country or someplace. You could have some of your senses in both locations at the same time. And I'm not, this is, again, not necessarily fantasies. I mean, this is, or even, it's somewhat metaphysics, but it's not necessarily that much. It's really based on a lot of physical principles or physics principles that come from quantum physics. So, interestingly enough, there's some explanation, even in the known sciences. Known being that this stuff has certainly been around for nearly 100 years, people have got this idea. And it's been checked out in experiments from like 85, 90 years ago. And it was discovered that it's pretty much the way things are. Yeah, things really do this stuff. Now, okay, where does that put us then? If in fact, I mean, even just modern physics kind of supports this idea, then we've got, you know, CIA spooky people running around actually doing this stuff and actually training other people to do it. And we have, you know, civilian types who have been doing experiments for 30 years or more of going out of their bodies and affecting things and being able to observe things. And then if you look at metaphysics in a spiritual sense, going back historically, I mean, this stuff has been known about for all of recorded history and before that people had out-of-body experiences. And then, so it isn't like this has been vacant or that I'm telling you anything that is really like new even. It's just that it's not well out there. It isn't completely understood within the, say, general population, because a lot of people still think as we thought 300 years ago, as bizarre as that sounds, because it works for us. I mean, you know, most people aren't having out-of-body experiences. Most people aren't having too much going on that's really different for them. They're not having near-death experiences, except for the few that actually do have them. And so, to them, reality is what just is every day going on in their life. And the old physics of Newtonian age, vintage, which is the 17th century, seems to be adequate. You know, and people say, well, yeah, that works for me. But again, since this is a show that kind of pushes the envelope, we've got to get a little deeper into stuff. And this is going to be much more interesting, I think, than just trying to figure out a Newtonian physical reality. Okay, so where does this lead us? Where does this move us to if we're going to understand better what the heck is going on? Well, I have to talk about this thing called Planck's constant or the quantum constant. It kind of affects everything, and it's very, very important to understand. It really has to do, and this is a kind of sort of a metaphysical, but there was a guy named Heisenberg who also came up with this idea, and others that work with him. It has a lot to do with thought controlling energy and having an effect on energy. Now, if you're a pure quantum mechanical physicist, you may disagree with me. But that's okay, because there's different schools to believe different things in that realm. But you might be open to hearing it, too, because you realize most of what I'm saying is pretty accurate. So thought seems to control very small amounts of energy where we are. But the quantum constant, I'm going to tell you this from my own experience, as well as from things I understand and know, is variable. It isn't constant. It's constant where we exist right now, because that's where we measure it. And it is measurable, by the way. It actually has a number in minus to the some fantastically small power of joules. It actually has a numerical value. It's very, very small. But this quantum constant, what it does is it says that, well, this is the amount that things are uncertain. This is the amount that you can't really understand where anything actually exactly is at any one time. And it's also the amount, at least in some schools of thought, that energy follows thought. And the stronger the thought is, not just in intensity, but more in a kind of frequency realm, in a certain direction, the more it affects the energy. Here's the interesting thing about this. I love this part about it. Are you ready for it? Here it comes. It isn't like you're a great thinker and you can really focus your thought on something that's going to get the energy to do something. A lot of people think that's how it works. Actually, there's a guy named Einstein. Everybody's heard about him, right? He was doing some experiments of a thing called the photoelectric effect and some other stuff. And while he was experimenting, he discovered that no matter how intense you might try to affect energy, what really affects it is frequency rather than the strength of the energy focused on something. The frequency was really critical, and so is the way you direct the frequency towards an object to have a change in the energy that you're trying to change. Very interesting, because frequency and the direction is the same in metaphysical terms as thought. So in other words, if you're able to frequency something, what you're really doing is you're affecting choices, and your direction has to do with a thing called phase. So it's choices and it's direction. And you're actually, through your own thought, you're actually interplaying or having an effect on energy. And it goes way back to 1905 when Einstein discovered this thing. Now, did he understand it as I just explained it? No, not at that time. But others kind of later on kind of figured out what was fully going on with it. So fascinating thing that how we think is more important than how much we think. So if you really, I've talked to people, they say, well, I'm going to really meditate and just focus, and I'm going to change the world, change myself or whatever. And I'm going to be able to have an out-of-body experience too. And what I discovered is that it isn't the quantity of thought or the forcefulness and intensity of thought. Rather, it's the quality of the thought. And that quality of thought, which is really consciousness, it's the ability to focus in and be closer to the thought of our own creator. As you get closer to the creator's thought, you're more able to affect superpositioning, more able to affect all the stuff that changes energy. Energy will follow your thought better when you think more virtuously, more like God thinks, at least where you are, wherever you're focusing your thought from. In this dimension of time and space, obviously that's where we are. So if we think the way the Creator God thinks in this dimension, and that thought kind of changes in wider, greater dimensions, becomes a lot more inclusive and greater. But where we are, it's pretty narrow, but still it's huge compared to the way most humans think. But the closer you get to that, the more you have an effect on the way things are. Whereas if you try to do things in a selfish way, you will not, in most circumstances, be able to, in the ways that I'm referring to, affect energy. You can affect power, which will affect energy. But you can't affect energy in a way that will get it to consistently be creative and helpful. Power is a forceful method. So you can cause some forceful things to happen if you're selfish. The forceful things, they'll come back on you. And over time, they reduce your ability to even do that. Whereas, if you are thinking in a virtuous way, if you're thinking more like your creator thinks, alongside and co-creating with your creator, then you can make vast, long-term, and permanent changes. And you can create things that are immortal in their lastingness. Wow. That's a big deal. Whereas if you do it in selfish ways, it's very temporary and prone to create tremendous forces. And then you have to do something about the forces. Now you can try to get the forces to be forced out of someone else or something else that will suffer the consequences instead of yourself, at least for a while. That only works for a limited time. And that's what evil does, by the way. So that's a good way to explain what evil is. All right, so I hope I'm not losing you too much. I know this is heavy-duty stuff, and I know it's hard to follow. But basically, if you follow me so far, the better you think like God or closer to God's thinking, the more that energy will follow your thought, and the more the results that you seek will become reality. Now, if you're trying to remote view, as an example, if you're doing it for the right motives, and you have some element of goodness in you, you're going to be more successful at it by far than if you're doing it for the wrong motives, which like I really want to be cool, man. I want to experience this and have a great experience, and then I'm going to be more important than other people because I can do this stuff, and I'm going to force somebody else to do something I don't like or I want them to do, and whatever. You know, those kinds of things are not going to be as successful, and they have tremendously negative consequences. So that's something to be considering about all these things. And this applies, by the way, not to just remote viewing, as I said at the beginning of the show. This applies to the use of our senses in any way that is extrasensory, that goes beyond what we are normally used to, and that is what a lot of people would claim to be psychic. That's what it is. It's really the psychism that most people refer to, not the psychic of a soul, which the word psychic kind of refers to, but this is like lower, less than the soul's sense. If it's less than the soul's sense, then you're using these methods. And if you use them in ways that are very virtuous, your abilities to be psychic actually improve tremendously. And if you don't, you may actually lose some of your abilities as you attempt to use your senses in selfish ways. You might get some success being psychic for a while, but it will actually reduce your normal senses and your psychic senses over time. So because of forces you create in yourself and around yourself. So it's a fascinating, fascinating subject. And this is all fits into understanding this science that we're talking about that is controlling these experiences that people either want to have or aren't having. And it's important to know about this stuff because for a lot of people, they get themselves kind of embroiled in it and they may take out books on it or whatever. And they think that all they have to do is just practice and it's going to be fine for them. And again, it's more about how you live and what you're doing in your life than it is about, well, I'll spend so many hours that I'll become great at this psychic kind of ability. Now, is it true that everybody could develop some psychic ability? Yes, I would agree with that to some extent, and we actually probably already have it. But if you want to become exceptional or really capable, and especially if you want to do out-of-body experiences or significant levels of remote viewing, you better be on track with a virtuous focus, or it isn't going to come out too good for you. All right. So, and this all has to do again with what Einstein found in 1905, that the frequency and direction was more important, and as a matter of fact, the intensity. How intense photons were directed into something were had no effect. Didn't matter. You could push them with tremendous energy and it wouldn't affect anything. Get the frequency right and you direct it in the correct direction, and boom, bingo, you get radiance of light and you have this thing called the photoelectric effect and proof that these things are actually affecting electrons and eventually atoms and other stuff. That's what he found. Now, later on, Heisenberg found that it was all based on thought. But Einstein wasn't getting the thought thing because he was looking at it as a physical energy kind of experiment. He wasn't looking at it as a thought kind of thing. But maybe later, he might have started paying his attention to some of that because he was contemporary, although older, with Heisenberg. Heisenberg was doing this stuff in 1925, 20 years later, but Einstein was obviously still around and making giant waves in all the theories he was coming up with. Very fascinating, fascinating stuff. Okay, so hopefully you're seeing there's a metaphysical element to this and there's a spiritual element. The spiritual is that if we aren't following the direction of our own soul, which is the direction of God, and we aren't doing what we're doing here for the good of others and the good of everyone, then the result could be very bad because it has a negative impact on our senses and our ability to do anything. Okay. Now, I have gone through this very fast, and I realize I did not go through comprehensively the science of this. I'm only giving you little pieces. But you certainly can go and you can learn more about any of the science, because a lot of this is, like I said, it's physics from 100 years ago. You can read about it and you can understand some of the stuff, some of the reasons and some of the background to fill in the holes that I don't have the time to go into. Okay, so what about people who are having extrasensory experiences, including remote viewing, but much wider group of them? What is this? What is going on inside of them that is changing? Well, our senses are really designed or made from energy. the energy in our senses, the reason it works to be a sense rather than energy in the rest of our body that doesn't necessarily work as a sense, is because we use the most, we'll say, enlightened or the most developed kind of energy to work in a sense. Because the way a sense works is the following. The sense itself has a very, very slight amount of thought. And its thought is, has to be equal to or greater, in most cases greater, than the thing it's sensing. Because what it does is it takes a very, 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 very small fraction of the energy from whatever it's sensing, and it brings it into itself, and then it's, that is fed through our thing called the natus and then our nervous system, eventually into our bodies, and it allows us to get a little tiny fraction of our environment to give us a sense of it. So you see, that's how senses work. And this is true whether you're a tadpole or a dog or a human being. They all work the same. The senses always have the same design. Now, some senses are obviously much more sophisticated in the kind of energy and the levels. And I mean, you can get to very, very fine details on this. But generally, the senses just work the same way. And so, if your senses get contaminated because you're selfish, or you put a lot of darker energy into the sense, then the ability to sense diminishes. Because the only thing you're going to sense is energy that's equal to or less enlightened than the sense. And if the sense is pretty dark, it's only going to sense other dark things. And you can see how that works. And then your experience of the world is that it's all darkness, and you start interrelating with everything as a dark being. That's a terrible thing. And that happens to people. That's why people have a spiral downward when they start having more and more darkness within themselves, because it so affects their senses that it changes their whole beingness by bringing in information that only confirms darkness. And they just become more and more like that. That's a terrible thing. But that's how senses work, is that they attract through their own ability. So the sense itself works without us having to direct it to some extent. Now, you can improve a sense through thought if the thought is virtuous, or through force and power if you want to do it that way. But that's on the evil side of things, and we don't want to get into that. But so you can improve a sense. You can help it out to some extent. We do this whenever we practice. If we practice playing the piano, we are improving our sense of the keys and how to move our fingers and be able to read music if that's the way you do it. And all the other things you do. And you're doing it by continually practicing the sense so that as it feels those things, as it sees those things, it is able to integrate that information faster, better, etc. So that's what we're doing. We're improving the sense. Now, that kind of improvement in sense is not necessarily earth-shaking or anything, but it is, again, somewhat enlightening. It may be a very, very small amount, because it does serve a purpose. It actually improves our self, and then sometimes the selves of others, the lower self of us. And that's not a bad thing. I don't want you to think that's bad. It's only bad if you could do much more with your sense than that, and that's the level you tend to keep it at. But for a lot of people, that's an okay thing. So if you want to learn how to play the piano, that might be a pretty good thing to do for your senses. At any rate, we are, at this moment, running out of time for this segment. So we're going to be back in a few minutes. And when we come back, I'll tell you a bunch more about how this improvement in senses and everything else fits into extrasensory things, and how it also then eventually adds into remote viewing and having out-of-body experiences, which can be part of the remote viewing experience, and the whole thing. I'll try to put it all together so that it makes more sense when we come back from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And today we're talking about the physics and metaphysics of remote viewing and generally of, we'll say, any kind of psychic or lower psychic experience. This experience is less than the soul's experience of extrasensory perception and extrasensory abilities. Okay, so let me continue on. I hope that cooled off your brain those couple of minutes we just took. I know there was a lot of science there, too much physics. I apologize. I've been kind of on a physics jag the last week, actually. But nonetheless, I think it's important to kind of have some basis of how this stuff is all happening. Because if you don't know how it's happening, you're going to have trouble, you know, following what I'm talking about, right? Okay. So after the last segment, I think it's pretty clear, that senses in general work on a physics principle. They don't just work by magic. They work by a physics principle. And if you want to improve them so that you have extra senses, extra sensory perception, then you need to either do one of two things. Either you're going to try to practice and try to develop either parts of yourself and other people's selves, and just generally do things that are considered good for people, or you might go the wrong path and do something really bad, which would be forceful and destructive, and the only way you can achieve it is by stealing from others, even their own sense, beyond that, many other things. I don't want to get into too much of the other side, because I really don't want to tell people how to do that. That's not what we're here for, right? Okay, so we've got this situation now. We can improve our senses, and we can make them work a lot better, and we can actually develop some extrasensory perception. One of the things we can develop in extrasensory perception is right here in the physical world, but it's the electromagnetic or etheric, sometimes I use two words interchangeably, part. And that part of our sense allows us to project our senses away from our physical body further, considerably, than we normally can. Now, you could say, well, I can hear things 100 feet away hundreds of feet away, thousands of feet in some cases. I can see things that are hundreds or even sometimes thousands of feet away. Not very well, but thousands of feet without some aid like a telescope or binoculars. But nonetheless, that's the limitations in normal circumstances. But some people choose to focus on their etheric senses and to develop them, just as we might practice to develop the senses better in practicing playing the piano. They develop their senses so that they can see miles away. Well, that's a lot. That's definitely extrasensory, right? And they can maybe hear miles away, and maybe both at the same time. They could also feel some things, possibly, that far away, or more. So here we have the beginnings of what I call the etheric or electromagnetic extrasensory perception that someone can develop while they're physically alive. Now, if you're dead, you're not going to be able to develop that sense, because then you're living in another dimension of time and space. You don't have a physical body anymore. So then you, unless you're trying to possess somebody who is alive here, you're not going to be able to do it. But that's an aside. So this is an interesting idea that we can do that if we exist right here. Now, there are four different levels that we can do this at. But the lowest one, which is called the etheric subplane, it's almost like saying it's redundant. The etheric subplane of the etheric plane, it's like redundant. But that's the lowest level that we can function from. And that usually works miles away, but it doesn't work like hundreds or thousands of miles away. It works just a local neighborhood. And if you were working on your etheric senses to try to have extrasensory perception in that way, and you're only doing it from the etheric level, it's relatively limited, but it's also the easiest place to do it from. And you can do it without being really majorly virtuous. I mean, you could kind of just be your average person who might be fairly selfish, but you'll be more successful at it by far if you're still doing it for some good reasons. In other words, to develop some goodness in yourself and in others, and helping people to be more inclusive. You do it for reasons that are not just to gain something for yourself. So if you're really attempting to do that, it'll be easiest. And it's easiest to accomplish on this etheric subplane, where the frequencies are not nearly as high, and the phase aspects, the direction that you have to exist in, while being closer to God, is not as close as it would be on these other three levels. Now, what are the other three levels? Well, they have names, and one of them is called the super etheric, and then the subatomic, and finally the atomic. Now, those atomic and subatomic, those names were made long before there was atomic energy. So don't think it has anything to do with, like, nuclear science or something. It's not. It just comes from an earlier age when these things were talked about much, much more in a spiritual and metaphysical sense. Okay. So if you want to go to these higher levels, you're going to have to really work on yourself to increase your consciousness by becoming more co-creative with God and doing things in your life that are really giving to others. Then you might be able to actually function from these higher levels. And if you do function from those higher levels, you can extend your senses clear around the entire planet. It might take time, though. This is kind of interesting. It might take as much as an hour or longer to be able to travel your sense clear across the entire globe to, say, the other side of the world, even if you're on the atomic level. Because even though you can travel pretty quick with your sense, it takes a while to usually develop this ability of minutes or longer. Now, some people get very good at it, and that isn't necessarily true. And then it does take a bit of time usually to travel that. Now, at the very, very top on the atomic level, you actually can do it at the speed of light, and then it takes no time at all. But if you're doing it, like, at the subatomic level or not near the top of the atomic level, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some time to actually get the sense to move tens of thousands of miles. And that's a lot. That's a huge amount of distance that you might be moving. And so that's one of the limitations. And the interesting thing about this is that just deals with one body and one set of senses. We also have an astral body. And in theory, and in actuality, people do develop psychic astral senses while they are physically alive, meaning they're able to focus their consciousness into their astral body and actually use one or more of their astral senses while they're physically here. And they are able to do it through extra-dimensionally some part of astral space and time. It's pretty hard to imagine, but it's actually can be done. And that's what some of these psychics who are really great ones do. They actually do use their senses that way, and they can see people and things in the astral world. They can actually communicate with people in the astral world. And they can do so almost instantaneously and at almost any distance because the speed of light is actually much faster in the astral world, and they are functioning way beyond the speed of light in the physical world. So they can get almost anywhere in their time at all as far as their senses are concerned. They can reach people in the astral world that actually may be halfway between here and the moon in three-dimensional space, and then further in another dimension of time and space altogether, and they can reach them instantly with no time delay. Amazing stuff. I mean, that truly is amazing stuff. Now, while they're physically alive, their time is different than the time of the people who are alive in the astral world, because there's a thing called time dilation. And again, going back to the physics of this thing, the astral world has a different, a considerably larger quantum constant, which means things are much more uncertain there. It kind of makes energy very fluid, and you could change it almost with a very, very simple thought can change energy. Unfortunately, it also means that when people are selfish, they can change energy much easier than they can here. So in the physical world. So unfortunately, people who are selfish can have a grand old time in getting their way in some respects, in some of the lower dimensions of time and space, especially it's called the eighth sphere, where evil exists, evil people exist, because they love it. Because there, they can really get energy to do exactly what they want, and they can get very powerful. And then all the negative effects that come from the forces they produce, they push off into other people. That they are in some way manipulating or controlling by common thought with them. Amazing. But that's what goes on there. And for the rest of us who aren't doing those kind of evil things, and for people who are psychic, they can take advantage of some of their astral senses. Now, what if you want to use your astral senses to, like, remote view or to actually move your senses clear across half the planet and observe somebody, and maybe even have an interaction with their astral body? They wouldn't necessarily know about it unless they were psychic. But you could actually do that. Now, if you're doing it for very bad things, it's not a good thing to do. But maybe there's a good reason to do it. I don't know. I'm not going to make that judgment. But it is something to consider, that people can actually do this, that you could travel almost anywhere in almost no time at all, and by using these more subtle senses. Now, this is not something that, to my knowledge, that the CIA or anybody like that is doing, because it's very, very difficult to do. And you have to really develop your senses in unique ways. And pretty much you better be living a very spiritual life or be a very evil son of a bitch who just doesn't care. I guess then, you know, you'll be an evil person. But I'm not suggesting that those evil people are necessarily working for our government or something like that. But somebody could get into that. That's a real negative thing, terrible. But for the most part, if you were a very good person, you actually could do this sort of stuff. And the physics are supported by it. In other words, what I'm explaining to you, although I'm skipping over a lot of the science, it actually, if you expand the quantum constant, and just as I say it is, and you start doing the math, it actually will show that everything I'm saying is completely possible and even probable that you could do this stuff. And we all have astral senses, by the way. That's what we call our feelings, you know. But they're so subtle that we barely use them while we're physically alive because we're overwhelmed by the input of our physical senses. The energy that comes in is so much denser and more forceful that the little bit of sense that we get while we're physically alive from our astral senses is just the most minimal thing. Some women are better at it than men. You ever talk to a guy and, you know, well, how are you feeling? I said, I don't know. What feeling? You know? And sometimes women are better at that than men are because the astral body is a feminine body, and so women are a little closer to it, and they can sense a little better while they're physically alive in their astral body than men are. Men can't. But we all have astral feelings. We all use the feelings to some extent. It's just that we can't use them to get clear sense from them. What is clear sense? Well, actually, it's the word is usually clear, which refers to the astral world. You get a clear sense when you are able to literally move your consciousness very close to that center and away from your physical centers. How can you do that? Well, you can do it in sensory isolation situations, or you can do it in meditation. And if you develop the astral body from doing virtuous deeds and giving to people and functioning more as a soul, it naturally occurs. It actually naturally occurs, and it starts to unify with the physical body in a way in which the two bodies you can sense from at the same time. That's real superpositioning, because now you got superpositioning happening between different bodies in different dimensions of time and space. Besides just the same body having a sense in two different locations, now you're using different bodies from different dimensions in different locations. Whoa. That's huge. And the better you are at doing this, the more you become a super psychic. And if you're trying to remote view, the better you are at doing this, the better you will get information accurately, and the more you will be creative with that information in a positive way. So that's a good thing. But there's a lot of pitfalls to it, because if you aren't doing it for the right motives all the time, you're going to create a lot of problems for yourself and possibly other people. Now, in remote viewing, you can remote view, and most people, when they do it, they actually don't physically leave their body. They just extend their senses. Some people remote view by actually having a true out-of-body experience. I actually think that's a lot safer to do in some respects, because as you continue to remote view by having an out-of-body experience, there's more chance that you're going to realize that you're not the physical body anymore, and you start identifying with more of being your soul to some extent. But the danger with it is that when you leave your body completely, you also, if you do any kind of selfish activities, cause significant damage to your senses. So the safer way from the selfish viewpoint is, if you're going to remote view, don't leave your body, just extend the sense. But if you're going to do it unselfishly, then the better alternative is to leave the body. And if you leave the body and you do it selfishly, you won't be doing it for very long, because you're going to become senseless. Your normal senses will diminish, besides the extrasensory perceptions that you've developed in the process. Does that make sense to you? I hope it does. And so this is, I realize this is way more information, way more advanced than what we talked about last week. Last week was just like, oh, we're just kind of giving you a general idea about it. This week is more specific because, after all, this is more about getting into the science of this whole thing and why it is, conceptually, why is it that this is taking place. Okay, so there's a tremendous danger. And this is true of not just remote viewing, but using any psychic sense selfishly, you'll get the same effect. But if you leave your body, you magnify both the positive and negative effects. And it's very difficult not to have negative effects, because most people are somewhat selfish. So it's hard to get around that. So if you're going to start leaving your body and going places and doing things, the chances are that it's going to over time. I'm not saying you do it once and that's it, you're through, you're finished, you're gone. No, you do it dozens of times, and you're probably in very bad shape. You do it maybe a half dozen times, and you'll notice some diminishment of sense and some problems. So this is the range I'm trying to get at. Once, probably you will never even notice it. And if you do, the interesting thing is, if you can notice it, you probably didn't do much harm, because you can still sense the loss. But if you don't notice it anymore, then you're really in trouble, because then you're losing your sense so fast that you don't even know that you're losing it. And that can happen. That can really happen. That's why it's good to get feedback from other people if you're doing this thing. Because if you start doing any of this sort of stuff, you may not know until it's way too late that you've lost your sense of almost anything and everything, and diminished who you are in the process. Okay, now you might be saying, well, this guy's starting to scare me about this stuff. Well, you know, I'm not trying to scare anybody. I'm only trying to inform. But there are some things that scare me about it. I mean, really. And that's not because I'm unfamiliar. It's because I'm familiar. This is, you know, been there, done it, had a lot of experience with it, know that it has some serious drawbacks. Okay, so then if we are looking at the process of using extrasensory perception for more than one body, we have the potential to unify the bodies or to cause them to further separate, which will diminish sense. Now, if we were to unify the bodies, because we're doing great spiritual service, it actually could accelerate the process. And I actually wrote sort of a novel, and there's some truth, to say the least, in the novel, in which some of the characters in the novel actually were having out-of-body experience, but eventually, for virtuous reasons instead of selfish, and the results were an improvement, significant improvement, in consciousness and eventually unification of sense, which allowed them to do some truly superhuman kinds of things. And that part of the story, as a matter of fact, most of the story is true. I mean, that part of the story is absolutely true. So it's a description of what really can happen if people follow a certain path in themselves. And I hope that makes sense to you as you have listened to today's show, because we're running out of time for right now. And I hope it will make a difference to those people who are going to dabble or think about dabbling in any of this stuff, or who already have some psychic abilities but don't understand what the heck they're doing or why, et cetera. And if you want to know more, you can contact me. You can get me at niles@whylifeis.com or thoughts@whylifeis.com. Those are two possibilities. And you also can, I guess you can send an email or do something. No, you can probably just access our agelesswisdom.com website if you want to know just generally more stuff about some of the areas that I've talked about. Okay, and then I want to mention also that, let me get this in here, out here, that on the 15th, which is this coming Monday, Mimi, who's a member of the spiritual group I'm a member of, and that means that we share doing good things together. That's, you know, our goodness and trying to develop a more virtuous world and, you know, humanitarian projects and that sort of thing. At any rate, she's going to be talking over at Borders Books and Music in Mesa on this coming Monday. It's from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. She's going to be talking about reincarnation. So if you are in the metropolitan Phoenix area, and you can make it over to Borders, Fiesta Borders in Mesa, I get there by 7, and there's no charge, and you can just have a conversation and talk about this whole area of metaphysics, including reincarnation. So go ahead and join her for that. Okay, I hope this has made sense in today's show. Of course, I could have talked a lot more, getting much deeper into the science of this, but I think I gave enough. And if you do want to have a better understanding further, you can communicate with me outside of just this realm. You know, I'm available. Just let me know. And hopefully it has made some sense. I hope that now people can say, I think I understand what extrasensory perception is a little better, and I think I understand what this remote viewing is that we talked about last week a little bit better. So it all kind of fits together, and it has some reasonable, we'll say, way of making use of it, making use of the understandings, and maybe even being careful in the use of these kinds of things. Well, we're out of time for right now. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.